Well, thank you, Ian, for that kind welcome to TCV, VFMC and CEDA for hosting today's lunch. Thank you. And it gives me a great pleasure to speak today about the state budget, put it into the context of where we are with the global recession, as we can call it now, and where we are as to coming out of that global recession. So this is an opportune time to speak about the budget. It clearly will be a focus for me for the next several weeks, not just because it is an issue that is fundamental to where Victoria goes forward, but also it is an issue that we need to get through the estimates process and our parliament, and it is one that will make a difference. If we go through describing the budget features, really there are five features of the budget which will really run through the presentation. It is a budget about a jobs building budget. In this budget we talk of securing 35,000 jobs that otherwise would not be there. It's also a budget that is one done within the constraints of AAA. So this is a budget that is maintaining AAA and all that goes with it, and I'll go through the structure of the budget through the presentation. It's also a budget that's one of partnership. The state and Commonwealth are working together more closely, probably certainly than at any time in my political career, and probably in the memories of many people of this room. It's a strong partnership between the two levels of government. It's also a family-friendly budget. This is a Labor budget. It is focusing on families, on key services for Victoria in a time of great economic difficulty, and it's a budget for recovery. Recovery both in the sense of a large and significant contribution to rebuilding from the bushfires, but also more general recovery. We need to be positioned to bounce out of this global recession, and that involves focusing on the fundamentals. We still need to invest in skills. We still need to invest in infrastructure. We still need to make our economy more competitive, whether it be the tax rates, whether it be reducing the regulatory burden. We need to do those things going forward into the future if we're going to continue to grow the state's economy and grow Victoria. But opening up in the international context, and that's what we need to talk about. The world is in the grip of a global recession. Ian Ferris mentioned the worst figures in 60 years. Well, I've got on a graph here back to 1970. We can go back to World War II. We can go back to the Great Depression. The figures start getting a bit vague, what you're matching with matching, but the message is quite clear. The world has not been in this position, certainly in my lifetime, and certainly not for a long, long time. The IMF charts that for us, it's objective, it looks at the whole world. The two things, though, from the graph that are important. One, we are in a world recession. Two, the IMF says the world in 2010 will come out of that recession. 29, negative growth, 2010, modest growth going forward. It's worth mentioning with the IMF that it not only collates the information, it also has economic advice for governments around the world. Has a lot of advice, but one thing in particular that is telling now is it's advising governments everywhere that investing in critical and necessary infrastructure now is important as stimulus. Pick your projects that are projects that need to be done. Pick your projects that are not Mickey Mouse, they're not painting rocks, they are real roads, hospitals, schools, bridges, infrastructure, ports, you name it, real projects, but do them early and it will help with stimulus. That's the advice of the IMF. And across the world, governments have now committed more than $5 trillion towards this stimulus project. And this budget needs to be seen in a context of a global response to a global problem. Being more positive about it, the IMF also forecasts figures for where they see individual economies going in these difficult times. And our largest export destination from Victoria is China. And the IMF is forecasting strong growth for China. 6.5% by terms of 4 or 5 years ago may seem meagre, but in terms of a shrinking international economy, China is powering along. China is our largest export destination, and China is Victoria's largest export destination, not Australia's. So it's one of the reasons why we can be more optimistic about our own economy. Not only is it more diverse than it has been before, not only have we made a lot of hard decisions over the years to improve its productivity, but also its major trading partners are a different mix from other economies. The second largest export destination from Victoria is New Zealand. We see on here that growth in New Zealand, yes, it is in decline. But the point is, China and New Zealand are two largest export destinations, are relatively strong, and certainly in China's case very strong, compared to the basket of most world economies. Move on then to, I've got a graph here describing the performance of our banking institutions. Now, you know, we can use multiple measures to see how banks are performing. What we're seeing here is non-performing loans as a share of total loans. We see in Australia that the non-performing loans has increased over the last little while, but we compare it to the US and we see the non-performing loans going up a lot more highly. Without dwelling too much on the non-performing loans and just talking more generally of the banking sector, the banking sector in Australia is strong. We have 11 banks worldwide with AA or better ratings. Four of those are the Australian majors. So what we're seeing here in Australia now is a stronger banking system. Now every business, almost every business I meet, has issues with banks. They'd like the banks to lend more, they'd like the banks to be, you know, a bit more generous. They were lamenting the fact in commercial construction that international banks are going offshore in numbers that we'd rather they that were smaller. But our core major banks have AA credit ratings, and there's only one bank in the world, one private bank with a AAA credit rating, and that's Rabobank. And as an anecdote that some of you may have heard before, I believe the board and the management team of Rabobank are going through their teledexes at the moment and reminding all those people in the last 10 years who told them that they were too conservative, that they weren't. I think they're having a bit of fun at Rabobank. But the serious point here is our banking system is stronger, and if we look at the focus of the UK, the focus of the US, the focus of the European Union, the focus of the Eurozone within the European Union, it's how do you deal with toxic assets, strip them out of the financial system so it can go on forward and get on with the business of doing business. And our banking system is stronger, which gives us cause for optimism. Looking at credit spreads, that issue of, you know, the difference between the cash rate from the reserve to what actually is out there in the real world, we're seeing credit spreads are narrowing. So that's actually another cause for stability in the sector. And a lot of the narrative at the moment on where our budget fits in here in Victoria, where nationally budgets fit in and where we're going for the economy really depends on when we predict that this current worldwide recession is going to bottom out, when the slowdown in the Victorian economy is going to bottom out, and all these are indicators of change. President Obama describes it as a glimmer of hope, and we're seeing many statistics here that are starting to show that the causes of the economic distress of last year are starting to abate. I don't think anyone is quite brave enough to predict when a downturn turns around, but things are bottoming out. The share market, we've seen obviously catastrophic slumps in the share market since 1 July last year. If we talk since 1 July last year, about several weeks ago, the decline in the S&P ASX 200 was over 40% on 1 July. It might be a silver lining on a dark cloud, but that's now 27, which is showing that it is bouncing around, bottoming out, and starting to climb up again. This is important not just for the value of assets that people have, it's also important for confidence. But if you see your assets stripping down, you start losing confidence. And the debate, which sometimes seems academic, where, you know, politicians or ministers will talk about a glass half full versus a glass half empty, are highly relevant. If you're expecting people in the private sector, citizens, to start making investment decisions and spending decisions, a person who is confident is far more likely to make them than a person who is not confident. Which takes me to business and consumer confidence. Again, the measure you see on the screen has shown it is below what we'd all like it to be, below what we're used to it being, that we're starting to see that confidence level rise. And again, the significance of that is, if we can look at multiple areas in our economy and see the effect. Now, with Premier and I announced today changes to the first home buyer scheme, we were skewing it far more to new construction than it previously was. A confident consumer is likely to go out and buy a home and add to construction jobs. A confident consumer is likely to go out into retail, and 11% of our employment is actually in retail. 75% of the value going through our retail comes from Australasia. Confidence in these areas boosts, and we're starting to see this happen. Yesterday we saw figures of building approvals. I don't dwell too much on month-to-month figures, they move around, but the trend continues, they've strengthened, and Victoria is performing more strongly than other jurisdictions. Also looking at employment growth figures, we're forecasting in these budgets, and I'll put the slide up shortly, that we're actually expecting unemployment to rise by 2% in Victoria over the next few years. That's a figure that is too high. It's a figure we do not like, but it is a reality of what's come through from an international downturn, the chill winds of which are affecting our own economy. However, if we look at this figure here, there is an enormous focus on a component manufacturing company that sheds jobs. We as a community and a government need to deal and assist and work in that area. But often the commentary doesn't refer to a company like Woolworths, which recently announced it was employing 7,000 new people across Australia this year, a net 7,000 new people. I was at a breakfast this morning and there was a guy in the environmental sector who's into solar panels who was telling me he had actually expanded his workforce in a year from 6 to 150 people in a growing area. And the irony was he had a customer who was complaining came in to say no one was answering the phone, and he actually employed her that day because she needed a job and he had one for her. Now, there is clearly rising unemployment. I'm not in any way discounting that, but what I'm saying is the other side of the equation, there are parts of this economy that are growing now, there are parts of this economy that will continue to grow, and a balance will start coming where those growing exceed those declining, and we need to focus on growth and encourage it, and confidence is a large part of that. But it's not just confidence, it's policies. And we're working closely with the Commonwealth. On the screen you see a number of the infrastructure investment programs that the Commonwealth has announced over the last several months. We have been willing and active partners in each and every one of those projects. And what we have sought to do with the Commonwealth is to integrate them through existing state service delivery. We've done the job of delivering schools, of hospitals, of houses. We want to work with the Commonwealth who don't normally deliver these programs to deliver them more effectively, and we leverage off them and we value add to them. And still to come is the Building Australia Fund, is the Health and Hospitals Fund, and is the Higher Education Fund. So in this budget, we've left capacity in a number of areas to work with the Commonwealth when they release, probably a budget next week, their spending in these large infrastructure funds. If we go to put in the context of infrastructure, since we've been in government, elected in 1999, we have quadrupled infrastructure expenditure in Victoria. We've quadrupled it. And on the graph you see a lot of that is brought forward to now, when it is needed, to secure jobs. On the graph also, because I don't go through our budget, these figures, are the yellow bars on the top, which is direct Commonwealth money to non-government schools and direct Commonwealth money to housing associations. And while they're not part of the state budget, they add to the stimulus of what is going on. So we get to about $8 billion in money coming through Victoria this year from Commonwealth and state government towards infrastructure. And if we add to that, and it is on this chart, the money that our public non-financial corporations like the water authorities and the Port of Melbourne do, we actually get to over $11 billion in stimulus and infrastructure. It doesn't replace what's been vacated out of the private sector, but it certainly goes a long way to mitigating that level of unemployment, that level of decline in economy that would happen, and jobs, if we had not introduced these stimulus packages. I now go to the economic projections that we're forecasting for Victoria. And the first line is economic growth. In this financial year ending, we're forecasting 0.5%, which is well down on what we forecast at the budget last year. In the next financial year, we're forecasting 0.25%, and then we're forecasting growth going forward. There's a lot of debate about this, a lot of debate about are we in recession, are we not in recession, a whole range of issues. Whatever happens in calendar year 2009, they're academic issues that will be addressed after the event by people analysing individual quarters. But what I do know is the last quarter of state final demand in December was positive, and Victoria was right up at the top there in Australia. What I do know is that these forecasts show that by our actions in economic stimulus, by what we see as where the economy is bottoming and moving, that we will actually see mild but ongoing growth in Victoria. And in the end, from a government's perspective, you can sit back and wait and look at what the figures are, or you can act. And what we've done is we're acting to boost infrastructure, boost jobs, and do all the things that we can do to encourage growth in Victoria now. The other figures in there, we see a net decline percentage employment forecast for this year and then modest increases. We see the unemployment rate, what you'd expect, the correlation for it to go forward. The financial year for this one, we're forecasting 5. At this end of the financial year, the figure is 5.7, which is what you would expect, and we're expecting that to go up by another 2 over the next year. We're expecting inflation to stabilise around where the RBA sees the midpoint for it to be. expecting wages growth to continue to moderate, and we have a new wages policy in government which is lower, but clearly most private sector EBAs are for 3, 4, 5 year periods, so it'll take a while before the market has any effect on that. And we're also seeing population growth. And in fact, we're projecting in some of the out years stronger population growth in this budget than we did last year. And that is a significant boost to the Victorian economy and all the things that go with it. So our financial objectives are to maintain a AAA. We're seeking to have a $100 million surplus this year rather than a 1% of budget, which we thought to have previously. And we're determined to maintain the AAA, and we do that in a number of ways. But significantly, we need to manage our borrowings so that in the medium term, they commence to come down. And in this budget, we see that as a percentage of economy, by the end of the forward estimates, our borrowings as a percentage of GSP come down. We also will have a cash surplus by the end of the forward estimates years, and a cash surplus is obviously a direct correlation between a cash surplus and a reduction of government debt. Looking at the surplus itself, $165 million this year out of a budget of $42 billion, so it is a very modest surplus, and we see that go up in the forward estimates years. And again, of course, when we get to the $562 million in the out years, that is money that can go straight to infrastructure the following year without any requirements of borrowing for that money. So this is where we need to be to continue an infrastructure program and continue it in sound financial circumstances. I've got a graph up here now which shows general government debt as a percentage of the economy and in actual bar terms and bars that we have there. What we see is general government debt was in the order of 3% of GSP when we were elected to government. In every single year since we've been elected to government, we've had that debt as a percentage of GSP as less than the government we succeeded. What we're forecasting now, and we forecast last year and the year before, is that that would gradually build up to fund our infrastructure programs. And with this budget, with a massive infrastructure, combination of state and federal, we're seeing that by the end of the forward estimates, as a percentage of GSP, general government debt actually starts tapering off. It's important to dwell on this for a moment because there is a big debate over do we bring forward infrastructure or not, a big and legitimate debate whether we do or not, but the reality of this graph shows that this is manageable, it is prudent, it actually has an endpoint where it starts to decline. We can look at this another way, and the graph we've got here, it's not the same data, and I don't pretend it is, but it's the non-financial public sector net debt. And this data also includes some instrumentalities, and I'll be up front here, that we don't have anymore, and this includes some of the electricity bodies and gas bodies. But if you look back to when Henry Bolte was Premier, now I was born in 1958, and Henry Bolte was Premier in 1958. When I was born, this debt was 58% of our economy. What we've seen is measure of debt, taking it to the present, goes right down, and then rises slightly. And this, of course, includes the water authorities in the Port of Melbourne as well as general government. But the point I make here, if we look at the two graphs, we have debt by the standards of the last decade, borrowing starting to rise, then starting to taper off as a percentage of the economy. But if we look over the longer period of time, during my lifetime, we see that actually borrowings are historically very low levels, and a chart like this would be nothing like what we're being shown in an equivalent gathering in almost any state of the United States, in almost any part of the European Union, where levels of debt, if you don't add a zero to the end of them percentage-wise, you don't come far off it. We are a very low borrowing economy. We've had modest borrowings, and what we can do with this is bring the infrastructure forward, and there is a plan to reduce the borrowings going forward. Which leads me to AAA. And there's been a bit of speculation. There was one of the papers ran a story the other day about modelling the ANZ Bank had done. There was a lot of levels of miscommunication through that, but I think if anyone was doubting what Standard & Poor's would do with the Victorian government's credit rating, we saw that yesterday. By the time I sat down from the budget speech, I think the press release was out reaffirming AAA for Victoria. And this graph here shows the measures that they have published, where they go. Our borrowings do go up. We do not get to their trigger point. And in fact, as we see from the bottom line, they start tapering away. We're acutely conscious we need to do a lot of infrastructure. We're acutely conscious we need to do it as fast as we can. We're also acutely conscious we need to do that within the constraints of a AAA credit rating, and we're focusing on this. Talk now about taxation competitiveness. I said earlier on in my presentation that we were very keen to position Victoria to come out of this global recession in a way that we just take off ahead of all the other economies. We've made that investment in skills. We're ahead of the pack. There's no question of that. We've got the highest number of apprentices of any state in Australia. The TAFE places, the skills, the demand funding, it's all in place to take us forward. We've got a very strong infrastructure program here. The competitiveness issue is a big one. How can we be a competitive economy? The Premier set me a KPI of reducing reg burden by 25% over 5 years. And in any of your organisations, if the CEO says to the CFO, this is a KPI, you pay attention. And I'm paying attention to the Premier, and we are reducing the reg burden. But on the issue of tax competitiveness, the graph I show here is actually taxes as a share of nominal GSP. We see the lines for New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland. Despite the 109 years of inequity, how the Commonwealth Grants Commission has allocated funds at the expense of New South Wales and Victoria, what we're seeing here is Victoria is actually going down as its taxes as a percentage of GSP, and New South Wales and Queensland are going up. Now, that's on the ADS measure of taxation. If we add to that royalties received by individual governments, we see the figure is even starker. In a budget yesterday, I announced royalties in Victoria in the order of $40 million, $40 million. In a Queensland budget in 6 weeks, their treasurer will announce royalties in the order of $3 billion. So our figures don't even register on a scale with Queensland's $40 million to $3 billion. So as far as the cost of doing business, how efficient government is, Victoria stacks up very well against other jurisdictions. It's something that makes us competitive, and we'll continue to work on it so that as we bounce out of the global recession, Victoria will be even better place to go forward. We all know where the bushfires are. They're a big feature of this budget. I won't explain what they were, because everybody in this room will in their own way have lived it, seen it, followed it. But the consequences of the bushfire for us in budgetary terms are we actually need to pay the bills for that fantastic relief effort, that fire suppression effort. There's a $350 million bill alone for those extra costs of the fire services in fighting it. Having 78 or 72 planes flying in the air at one time costs a lot of money, let alone everything else. So this budget needs to take this into account. And so we'll find from this budget a package of almost $1 billion towards bushfire recovery, relief and prevention for the future. There's a large portion of this that the Commonwealth is funding 50-50 with us, so the impact on the budget, well, we pay it all, and some of it comes back from the Commonwealth. But that is large, and that is before you even commence dealing with the Bushfire Appeal Fund, which I'm sure every person in this room would have contributed to, which adds more than $300 million again. So the point of this is there's work to be done going forward. We've worked in cooperation with the Commonwealth on this issue, and it is a significant issue in the framing of this budget this year. It's a series of programs listed on the screen of some of the areas where we've gone, but it is all about those difficult decisions we made. And some of them were highly efficient decisions, like engaging GroCon to be the coordinator for cleaning up all the 2,000 houses that were destroyed during the fires, meant that it was done quickly, that you can't have one street where you can't complete the work with one house hasn't been cleaned and is contaminated by asbestos. We've had a central body coordinating, engaging a lot of local labour. We've gone through and we will rebuild, and these projects go forward, including a lot of resources for emergency services communications and preparing for next year's fire season. The first plank that I mentioned in my first slide about where the government was going is on securing jobs. This is an $8 billion infrastructure program, which I've mentioned before you even add those government instrumentalities on top. And this investment secures 35,000 jobs that would otherwise not be there if this investment was not in place. Yes, government has ongoing capital works programs, but if we did not renew these programs, have this in place, this is the direct jobs that come from that before you talk to retail and other areas that clearly will spin off this. And again, we're not painting rocks. We're building on the Victorian Transport Plan, a $38 billion 12-year plan that's been thought through as to what the sequencing is. It tries to link rail, road, freight, livability, where jobs need to be located in Melbourne and Victoria, all of those issues. So it's a real plan. We can take things off the shelf from it, and we've started in this budget. It also is a building on a Victorian schools plan, also a building on a Victorian water plan, and there are strong health and hospital investments. This supports construction activity across Victoria, but not just our own infrastructure. Our planning minister has called in a number of projects. We don't do this lightly. It's got to be a very fine balance what you do. But he's called in a series of projects so that private sector investment also can be brought forward to stimulate jobs and move the economy forward. In addition to the stimulus, we also, in this budget, what rolls out is a lot of our industry and manufacturing statement last year, real and significant assistance going forward for manufacturing, financial services, ICT, all these important areas of the economy. We have an industry transition fund of $50 million announced last year funded in this budget, which again assists those industries that are export ready, ready to go out there in the world, but there is a glitch in this particular year that's got nothing to do with their strong forward business plan. And we've also got a transport infrastructure manufacturing scheme which lets Victorian companies leverage into the work being done by the Commonwealth and governments across Australia so they can position themselves in areas like rail, rolling stock and other manufacturing into the future. I mentioned before our work in skills. This year sees the rolling out of the first of 4 years of our skills initiative from last year, 172,000 new places over 4 years to meet those gaps in the economy and give great jobs to people in our economy. We've also done further work out of COAG last week, so we're bringing forward on skills. I won't dwell on the slide in front of us. It's the DTF work which shows how the construction projects I mentioned secure those 35,000 jobs during financial year 19. Now move to service delivery. We continue to focus very strongly on service delivery areas. Education's been one which has had an extraordinary boost, not just by the state delivering on its own infrastructure and service delivery programs. We committed to rebuilding, modernising 500 schools during this term. In this budget, we tick up to 375, exactly three quarters of the way through the term. But our effort has almost been dwarfed. Our $400 million this year has been dwarfed by the Commonwealth matching it more. So what we're seeing now is an enormous construction program in schools. The Deputy Prime Minister and our Premier and Education Minister announced earlier this week, I think it was Monday, announced more than 200 schools that were being funded out of this project going forward. And given there are 1,600 government schools, that's an awful lot of schools, and there's two more waves coming this year, and this is not counting the non-government schools, which are also being funded by the Commonwealth. We're also investing heavily into schools generally, but another feature of this where the Commonwealth comes in strongly is the computers in schools. It was an election announcement of theirs. It's one that we are partly funding. They're doing the lion's share, and that rolls out now into schools across the state. So there's a lot of resources going into schools, key service delivery area for a government. In fact, the largest single part of our budget this year is education and training as an area, big investment, state and Commonwealth. Second big area, obviously, for states is delivery of health services. Again, a large injection into the health system to shorten waiting lists, treat more patients and actually invest in capital infrastructure and equipment across the health system. There's a range of cities and towns and out parts of Melbourne that have hospital capital works in this, but there will also be further announcements when the Commonwealth announces its health and hospital fund money, probably at the budget. We've left some capacity in our budget to assist and match some of those projects, but that will be announced once we see where the Commonwealth lands and what our capacity is around the Commonwealth announcements. Transport, as I mentioned, we have the transport plan this year. Now, many governments put out plans, and people often in the community are cynical of government plans, saying it's another plan from a government, when are you going to do something? We announced last year, 12 years, $38 billion, great plan going forward. In this budget we deliver money for the first stages of the plan. And whether it be trains, whether it be the rail line from Epping to South Morang, a great area of construction deals with, in the past we need to double a line from Keon Park to Epping just to get the system up and running, so we're dealing with inadequate investment in infrastructure in the past. And as we go forward from Epping to South Morang in the growth corridor, we're actually building a line without level crossing. So that will actually save, it costs us more, but saves us actually in economic, social and environmental terms into the future. So it's a new form of infrastructure that we're moving forward on. There's another project, whether it be our commitment to the Peninsula Link, which will complete East Link. At the moment it effectively goes from Hoddle Street all the way through out east through the tunnel down to Frankston. It obviously hits an end there. This will extend it from Carrum Downs to Mount Martha, another piece of infrastructure that is necessary to actually improve the productivity of our economy and improve the livability of our citizens. And it's more than roads and rail, there's also bike paths, there's a range of other initiatives as well, which are in the budget papers. As a Labor government, we're also absolutely committed to building a fairer Victoria. This has been a very tight budget. We've been focusing our activities, very much targeting them to the most disadvantaged in a time of recession. And in here, we've managed to find resources to support particularly areas out of care, families where children just aren't getting on with their families or parents, some support for volunteers, foster parents in those areas, and some modest support in mental health and disabilities. And again, in partnering with the Commonwealth, the biggest investment probably since the war, if not of all time, on social housing stock, thousands of extra social housing stock between Commonwealth and states, plus some more investment in what we used to call the transit cities, Dandenong, Frankston, to take pressure off the CBD and neighbourhood renewal projects. In making our community more livable, we continue to invest in road safety initiatives. Our road toll is too high. Safer roads are just a critical area. We lose almost a person a day in Victoria through a fatality on the road, and we lose 40 times that many people suffer through injuries on the road. So road safety remains critical for us, and we'll invest in it. Funding to recruit and retain volunteers. There wouldn't be a Victorian who wasn't proud on the 7th of February and the days thereafter, what our 58,000 CFA volunteers did. There's many other forms of volunteering. We want to foster it and nurture it. We saw the value of it to us as an economy and a state, and as a community it is even stronger. This budget will continue to work in those areas. Plus there is support for a number of cultural institutions going forward, in whether it be the museums, whether it be support for sport, a range of areas there. In a liberal Victoria, investing in structures as well as in people, whether it be the police stations, whether it be the national parks being set up along the Murray, for the Murray River Red Gums, whether it be ETIS programs, whether it be the solar plan going forward, which the government has announced, or whether it simply be upgrades of infrastructure for cultural facilities. Regional Victoria, we were the government who came in, brought in fast rail to our large regional cities. We have rail links going now to Ballarat, Bendigo, Geelong, the Latrobe Valley. We now have dual carriage highway to Ballarat, Bendigo, Geelong, the Latrobe Valley with the completion of the Calder. There were further works on the Princes Highway West, the Princes Highway East, on the Western Highway. There was works on railway stations. We continue a major build of regional infrastructure as well as in schools and hospitals. In addition, we're continuing to fund our future farming plan that lets our primary producers deal with the changes that come through climate change and the changing world. There is continuing drought assistance, and the services across regional Victoria continue to be in place. If you look at the state, I won't go through each of the slides, there are a range of boosts across the state, but whether it's in the southwest of the state with things like the Princes Highway West or gas power stations or schools and hospitals, whether it be in the Grampians region, when we're in Ballarat Grampians, we're seeing all those areas, facilities coming forward to the state, roads, the train through to Maryborough, whether it be in the north of Loddon Mallee, we've seen Bendigo grow to over 100,000 people during this year, something that gives the Premier, as an old Bendigonian, great pride, and one which shows the growing parts of regional Victoria. In the northeast, many programs in health, many programs in education, but again, carrying out the really serious work this year of the $500 million rail freight upgrade through the northeast, which was announced last year. In Gippsland, we see work on roads, work on schools, we see a lot of gas exploration, a lot of infrastructure work down in the east of the state. And obviously big work going on in desalination in Wonsaggi. The outer suburbs of Melbourne, the transport plan rolls through, the education plan rolls through. And so if we look at the whole state of Victoria, we see a strong investment in delivering those key areas that I mentioned earlier on in my presentation. So in concluding, coming back to where I started from, this budget is at the time of global recession, Victoria's positioning itself to deal with that recession and to go forward. It's focusing on jobs by bringing forward the infrastructure, bringing forward at big time the serious projects. We secure 35,000 jobs that otherwise would not be there. We focus on and maintain a AAA credit rating. Standard & Poor's have confirmed that, and we think we've set the conditions that will enable Moody's to do the same. It's a budget focused on partnerships, the Commonwealth being our key partner, but the Victorian community and business being partners also. It's family friendly. In a time of a difficult international climate, we try to target those most affected and go forward into the budget, and it is a budget for the future. Out of this out of this global recession, Victoria will be in a position where we have strong investment in infrastructure, strong investment in skills, a competitive economy and a livable community. And out of recovery, it also assists us getting through the hurdles we need to rebuild after the bushfire. So, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the state budget. Thank you for your attention and thank you to the three organisations for giving me the opportunity to present today. Thank you.